Good evening and welcome to Black Talk Radio. This is your live drive at 5. Today's date is November 17th, 2014. We have another hour of news and information, and every once in a while we have some pretty good interviews during the week. Tonight we do have one such interview. Will actually sort of be like a panel discussion, but we're going to be joined by two North Carolina cannabis rights activists, Robert Doar. He has been on the program in the past. For those who don't remember, he is the veteran who suffers from PTSD, and he was using cannabis to treat his PTSD, something that has helped a lot of soldiers based on a number of studies, but it's illegal in the state of North Carolina, and he did the I guess you would call it unique thing, because not too many people are calling the police on themselves to make a political statement, and that is exactly what he done. He was growing his own medicine to treat himself, and so therefore he was arrested on that. So we're going to get an update on that, but we're also just going to be talking about just cannabis legalization in general, because it seems to be like an unstoppable force in the United States. I mean, more and more states are either totally legalizing cannabis or they have approved medicinal marijuana. The only defeat was down there in Florida this past election. Cannabis legalization initiatives, I guess if we could say they had a record this year, it would be 3-1. They will be 3-1. 3 wins and 1 loss, which was in Florida. We'll also be joined by Rebecca Forbes. And again, we're going to just talk about, you know, this recent legalization, get educated on ballot initiatives. North Carolina is unique, in that it doesn't allow statewide initiatives, but do they also, you know, they do allow county initiatives. So is it possible that North Carolina cannabis rights activists, could county by county put on these ballot initiatives? Because that's the way of, you know, the nation right now. Everybody agrees it's ridiculous to be locking up people, penalizing people in any way for using a natural plant that has been used for thousands of years. I will get their thoughts and reflections on Washington DC delegate Eleanor Holmes Norton. Now, I think we covered some of this last week. But again, she gave a speech on Washington DC's ballot initiative, which was successful, which will make possession of 2 ounces of cannabis legal. You can also grow your own. And I believe it also says something about you could share it. You cannot sell it or anything. It's not going to be taxed. It's not going to be regulated. You just grow your own as you would a tomato plant. And so, but it's remarkable in that this is making Congress weigh in and on the debate of the cannabis legalization that's sweeping the nation. But as Eleanor Holmes Norton said, she called a single threat to democracy in terms of the 650,000 people who live in the District of Columbia. And that threat to their democratic rights is a Republican out of Maryland by the name of Andy Harris. She talked about how he also tried to block D.C. cannabis decriminalization laws in Washington, D.C. Again, note what I'm saying here. He's a Republican or a representative from another state, you know, and I don't want to get into D.C. statehood things right now, because it's about, you know, the cannabis legalization. But this is what's going on. And so this makes this an important fight or important debate on Congress. If they go ahead and approve this law to go into effect, then how can they tell anyone in the world, like Mexico, like, you know, any South American country, Colombia, that they cannot too legalize cannabis? Cause all of it is enforced through the Washington's war on drugs. And they force these other countries to adhere to these drug treaties, that are outdated. Also, I want to get their thoughts on medicinal cannabis. The comments from Dina Titus, She is the representative from Nevada, and she just urged lawmakers to educate themselves and to go out and meet some of the business owners in various states that have legalized cannabis. So, I mean, there's just so many layers to this issue, but I just think it's pretty stupid to be, you know, arresting people, prosecuting people, and putting people in prison, what I call prison slavery, you know, for a plant, for a use of a plant, when they're allowed to use any other substance. This goes, you know, to free will. Do men have and women have free will? All right. So, but also in today's news, the lawyers representing the Attorney General Kamala Harris, they have been arguing in court that if they are forced to release inmates that the federal courts have said they need to release to ease overcrowding, they have been arguing, and therefore she is arguing, since they represent her, and her name is on the brief, but arguing that if they let all these people out, we would lose an important part of the labor pool, the prison labor pool. That's slavery, folks. That's slavery. So that's a attorney general arguing to keep people in prison because of their cheap source of labor. So I want to talk about that. That's just sad, you know, that Kamala Harris is allowing herself to be used in that fashion. It's proxy racism, you know. But anyway, and then Anonymous has hacked the KKK websites over Ferguson threats. Now, I do have some breaking news I do want to share before we're joined by our guest at the half hour mark. About a quarter after the hour. Is you got some breaking news out of Ferguson. No, the grand jury has not announced an indictment of Darren Wilson, but Governor Jay Nixon has declared a state of an emergency in Ferguson and has deployed the National Guard. So I'm going to go ahead and run that clip again. This is breaking news, and it has to do with Ferguson, as I guess we could say the world is waiting to see what this grand jury is going to do by way of, you know, allowing a jury to determine whether or not Darren Wilson is guilty of murder, or if they're not going to issue an indictment. And we know the prosecutor isn't interested in prosecuting this case, or he would have came to the grand jury with charges and not just simply seeking an indictment without charges. But anyway, I digress. Here is Governor, the report on Governor Jay Nixon discussing this state of emergency that has been announced.
We just got this announcement, as did the rest of the state, that the governor has basically declared a state of emergency here and activated the National Guard. We are already getting responses from some of the people who have been protesting here, even some of the residents who I've talked to, who are saying this seems to be a huge overreaction, being that there has been no real violence over the past 90 days of protesting. We are now at about 100 days plus of daily protests here in Ferguson. Some people are saying this is inflaming the situation more. But the governor has said over the past week or so that he wanted to make sure that the state is prepared, wanted to make sure that businesses and residents here in Ferguson and surrounding cities of St. Louis felt that they were protected and safe. The protesters, for their part, have said, we have been protesting peacefully. Yes, we've been loud. Yes, we sometimes use words that the police do not like. Yes, sometimes we're in their face, but we have been generally peaceful. And this just adds fuel to the fire, trying to paint us as violent protesters. That being said, we do know that there are a few cells out there who have been talking and planning on doing things that are destructive. The protesters that have been here on a daily basis and who are residents here in Ferguson have said, if we see someone being violent, if we see somebody acting out in that way, we will do our best to stop them from hurting our community, but we do want to be able to speak our minds. This has been a very, very difficult time here for some people in Ferguson. The business is saying that they are hurting because of what has been happening. On the other hand, they do believe in people's right to be out in the streets as long as it's peaceful, and it has been peaceful for most of the time. this announcement by the governor, it will be interesting to see by the end of the day how that affects the protests tonight.
All right, so that was that report via CNN, and there's a number of websites reporting it now. But the governor, Jay Nixon of Missouri, has declared a state of emergency. They are deploying the National Guard. And so I guess he's deploying the National Guard to protect the protesters from all those people in that county that bought all those guns and ammunition. So I imagine that's what he's deploying them for. Y'all know I'm joking, right? Okay. All right. So yeah, that's that report out of Ferguson. This must be a sign, though, that perhaps that grand jury decision is be coming out today. It was supposed to come out last week. Many people were speculating, I should say, that it would be announced Friday. Didn't come over the weekend. And so now that the governor has declared a state of emergency, so I guess that's a signal that it may come within the next few hours. And so I'll certainly be keeping people updated on that through our Facebook page, Black Talk Radio Network. We're going to go ahead and take a short break again. We will be joined here in just a bit by today's guest, or this evening's guest, Mr. Robert Doerr and Ms. Rebecca Forbes. We're going to be discussing all issues pertaining to cannabis legalization, and specifically what's going on in North Carolina. So I believe this might be one of our guests calling in now. Let me see if I can add them to the call. Area code 682, who do we have on the line? Okay, that person hung up. I'm going to roll into a break, and then when we come back, we should be speaking to our guests. You're listening to Black Talk Radio, the live drive at 5. My name is Scotty Reed.
Hey, hey, this is Coffee Black, coming through to bring you the latest in sports, celebrity, and entertainment news. Here's the sip this week. So this week is dedicated to members of society that just need to do better. So Dwight Howard is the next athlete being investigated for child abuse. He must have the same lawyer as Adrian Peterson because he said he ain't know no better. Sir, do better. And the Leah biopic that aired on Lifetime, that slander will live on forever. And I'm waiting to hear Wendy Williams' response tomorrow. Ma'am, do better. And we see Christina Milian are back together. Do better. Lil Bow Wow lost his job. That's right. 106 Park got canceled. BET, please do better next time. And Solange got married and all the guests were white. And it really gets no better than Mama Tina Knowles. She slayed it. We all need to do better. I'm just saying. Check out more on my site.
This is Tanya Free. Criticism of one of television's most beloved stars, Bill Cosby, is escalating with renewed attention to allegations that he sexually assaulted women in several incidents decades ago. American's favorite TV dad, Cliff Huskable, and Jell-O spokesman, seems to now have a less appealing side, not to be suitable for prime time. The 77-year-old icon has been accused by several women over the years of rape allegations, and he has never been prosecuted. Cosby has repeatedly denied the accusations. In fact, he took to social media, and apparently it backfired and drew more attention and questions to an issue that is long overdue. What's your take? Why do you think these rape allegations persist after so many years? Should Bill Cosby address these allegations publicly?
Check out the story and respond to this week's question at TanyaFree.com. Share your comments and opinions live on air Wednesday at 2 p.m. on the Tanya Free and Friends Talk Show here on WMXP 95.5 FM. Streaming live on BlackTalkRadioNetwork.com and TanyaFree.com. Your destination for social and political straight talk, headline news, and more.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. I come to the floor this afternoon because of a threat, a rare threat, because this seldom happens in the House anymore, but a threat to try for this House, or a member of this House, perhaps more than I know, but thus far we have only a single threat. But when it comes to the lawful legislation of the District of Columbia, that's a threat to democracy. That means that anyone who represents that city, this city, has to come to the floor and to indicate to members how important it is to hold fast to your own principles wherever you stand on the District of Columbia or any of the underlying issues. This is a local jurisdiction of 650,000 people who pay taxes without full representation in this House. So I'm asking members of the House not to take advantage of an anachronism in the law which does allow members of the House to step forward if they are inclined to try to get others to join them in nullifying the local laws of a local jurisdiction. If one reads...
Black Talk Radio, live at 5. Again, my name is Scotty Reed. And that was Delegate Eleanor Holmes Norton of Washington, D.C. And she was talking about this single threat in the form of a representative from Maryland in nullifying the cannabis legalization law that is could take effect. And I think, again, because this is a unique situation where Congress has to weigh in on whether or not 650,000 taxpayers who voted can approve cannabis legalization in their community or not, you know, that this could, depending on how this goes, I think it's going to set the tone, you know, for the rest of the fight. If they approve it, I think all of these states and all of these countries that are participating in the drug war are going to start falling like dominoes. And you're just going to see, you might even see a bill come through Congress to just take cannabis off of, you know, the schedule list of drugs. So, you know, or legalization, regulation, like they do alcohol and wine. So that was what she was remarking on. And, you know, just the audacity of, you know, to threaten direct democracy like that when the people have spoken, over 2/3 of the people. Joining me now are my guests, if I can just get their mics unmuted, is two North Carolina cannabis activists, and that's Robert Doerr and Rebecca Forbes. Do we have both of you on the line?
Yes, sir, I'm here.
Thank you both for joining us.
You're welcome.
Well, the first question is, it was indicated to me that both of you had an opportunity to watch what I call this historic speech in favor of cannabis legalization on the House floor. And, you know, those were some of the highlights or some of the points that were made in this, can't call her representative because D.C. doesn't have full representation, but Delegate Eleanor Holmes Norton, her pointing that out and saying, you know, how dare, you know, anybody think about preventing this law from going into effect, you know, shame on you. What did you guys take away? And I'll start with you first, Rebecca. What did you take away most from her comments yesterday?
Well, being an advocate that actively I go to D.C. every year to fight for cannabis reform with an organization called Evervote Government, I was very impressed with what she spoke about. I was very impressed that although she seemed not fully educated about cannabis, that she stood up for the rights of the people who put this initiative on the ballot, which is a big difference. And which is also what we just tried to do in North Carolina. Hold on, my dog is barking. But we tried to do this in North Carolina and had it shot down, and 2/3 of the people spoke. And for the federal government to interfere with that, or our newly elected Republican Congress, is basically a slap in the face of the D.C. voters.
Now, Republican Ron Paul, who sits on a committee that has, I guess, what you would call, it was described as jurisdiction over the District of Columbia. They have a committee, I guess. But he has said that he believes that they should be able to enact the law, and that in general that Congress should stay out of the state's business. He's claiming states' rights on this issue. So I thought that was a positive sign on this issue.
Yes, exactly. 2/3 of D.C. people have spoken that they want to see this law enacted, and basically it is law unless this new Republican Congress tries to carry out their threats to shut it down.
Before I bring Robert into the conversation, Rebecca, Robert had described you as a very educated person on the issue here in North Carolina. And you just said something that's news to me, because I was trying to research the issue, but I was under the impression that North Carolina doesn't allow statewide ballot initiatives. Am I incorrect in that belief?
No, you're not totally incorrect. Back in 2009, we did a petition drive that was shot down because our state does not allow that. But we did have a representative here, Representative Kelly Alexander, who just this last session introduced a bill to amend the North Carolina Constitution to allow medical cannabis. If we had been able to get that bill into a committee, which we were not because it was blocked by the Republican majority, it would have gone on our November 2014 ballot just like it did in D.C. as a for or against question. But we never got that far, so we're going right back at them this coming January. We're not going away.
Well, I don't think we should. Robert, thank you for joining us tonight, and I'll toss the same question to you. You know, what did you take away? What did you, you know, some of the key points that stood out to you on Mrs. Norton's comments, Delegate Eleanor Holmes Norton? And I do agree with Rebecca that she, in some spots I was saying, oh, she really needs to get educated about that. And I found at times she did contradict herself when she said that, you know, I can't go out and say that, you know, smoking cannabis is healthy. But then she then, you know, talked about, well, there are, you know, medical benefits. So, you know, she does need to get I would say a lot more educated on that side of it, but I'm glad she gave some time to the other, to the representative to talk from Nevada to talk about it. But before we talk about her, and I got a clip from her, what did you take away, Robert, from Delegate Norton's comments on legalization?
I was really impressed with Eleanor Norton's comments, and what I took away most from it was two things. The first one was equality of treatment. It's not plausible that you're going to have a group of people in one portion of the country that is forced into self-harm on pharmaceuticals or medical procedures that might otherwise be required of them, while you have individuals in another portion of the country who use it recreationally just for relaxation or to maybe they feel better, make them help them better enjoy a movie or something. I don't know. But people who are genuinely suffering were just really not interested in waiting on the politicians to figure this out, to the extent that we are going to start or continue to see the bodies pile up. So equality of treatment. The second thing, I thought they really, that D.C. did a good job in how they address the issue, that if you're an adult and you are of age and you are deemed to be responsible to consume alcohol, why would you not also be deemed responsible to consume marijuana, when we know now, we're not talking about it, we know it for a fact, that it is safe to use when used responsibly by adults. We've set the system up to keep drug dealers and cartels in business. It's hurting the society. We need to do something.
Speaking of the representative who said he may block it, but before I talk about him, do either of you agree, though, that if allowed to stand because of the unique situation where Congress has to approve it, well, let's say Congress does approve it, do you think that will have perhaps an impact on the future of, you know, legalization in other states and in other countries, perhaps? Because other countries have asked the United States to allow them to, you know, make cannabis legal.
Well, I work with Michael Kralitz from the veterans. He represents the veterans in the country, who works with Richard Branson of Virgin Mobile. And they're currently working on the UN drug policy, which is another hurdle that we have to cross, even once we legalize in the United States. And the way I see it is it's a force that cannot be stopped at this point. In our nation's capital, the people spoke. And once our nation's capital is legal, I'm quite certain that this is going to be the surge that those of us that need medical cannabis are looking for, but also the surge that we need to take to stop a marijuana user being arrested every 36 seconds in this country. So I'm super happy to see this. It's another win, a small win actually, but I think it's really going to push the movement along. And hopefully, I know we're going to talk about the lady from Nevada. Other politicians take her advice and go visit a up and running dispensary. Go talk to some patients like me with cancer. I got really actively involved fighting cancer with cannabis. And I beat it. And it's documented on my medical record. So we're just sitting back waiting for politicians to catch up with us.
Robert, same question to you. Could this, if this legislation is allowed to stand in our nation's capital, because of the unique situation where all the representatives, all the Congress gets to weigh in on it, if it does pass, I mean, can this be like a domino effect?
I'm under the interpretation that we currently are not forbidden to grow marijuana for ourselves in this state for medical purposes when they are genuine.
In North Carolina?
As far as my understanding of the law of this country, if I'm a citizen of the United States and I have a right to a medicine in one state, mm-hmm. and they're using it for, to get, whatever in another, jury. Give me a jury. Stop talking.
Yeah, Robert wants to get before a jury trial. He's got a very serious case that we're watching because he actually called and turned himself in.
Right, he's been on the program.
A very brave act.
yeah, he's been on the program before to talk about that. And so, you know, that goes to, again, let's flip the script for a second. Representative Andy Harris, the Republican out of Maryland, who wants to, and the word that was used was nullify this D.C. law from going into effect. But speaking in terms of jury nullification, you know, it is something that seems to be also picking up steam across the nation. And I think we would do well to keep educating the public that you don't have to convict people of these crimes if you don't agree with the law, if you feel the law is immoral. You know, jury nullification has a long history. So, Robert, where do you stand on your trial right now?
Actually, I have not been doing too well of late.
Mm-hmm. I'm sorry. You're not doing too well in court as of late. What do you mean? Or personally, emotionally?
Well, the last that we've heard will be in Union County, Monroe, North Carolina, on December 10th to support Robert. This has been a very trying event for him. And like I said, there's patients like him and I that we've just had enough. We have found relief from cannabis.
We're afraid of them resting in the grave.
Yeah, they will not let him get before a jury, and that's what we're going to go support him on December 10th in Monroe, North Carolina, the Union County Courthouse to do, is just to say, let this man speak. Let this man tell his story, because in North Carolina, we have no established medical defense for cannabis. We go to prison, patient or not.
Well, speaking for myself, I certainly hope that doesn't happen. And that's why I will continue to talk about jury nullification You know, if I get called on a jury here in Gaston County and it has to do with a nonviolent so-called drug crime, I'm voting not guilty. And we can sit in that jury for days and you can bring me pizza and make sure we got cable. But I'm going to be that holdout. You know what I'm saying?
A really good friend of mine, the New Jersey weed man, I'm not sure if you're familiar with him.
Yes, I'm sure. Acquainted with Ed.
Yeah, with Ed. I was in Seattle with him at HempFest a couple years ago, and we talked about this very issue. And not enough people are informed about the fact that if you're sitting on a jury and you feel that that person has not committed a crime, let's use Robert as an example, a veteran with PTSD, that needs medical cannabis. You can say that you can nullify the law sitting right there on that jury, because a jury of the people is the highest authority in this land. That's a jury of your peers. And if we refuse to prosecute these people, it will start some momentum.
Right. Refuse to,
especially in states like North Carolina, where we live with the good old boys here. I served 3 years in North Carolina for cultivating cannabis back when I was younger. Mm-hmm. And had my whole life taken away and destroyed. And actually, I'm featured in a movie called The Exile Nation Project, if you want to look that up. My daughter and I, who was taken at 8 years of age. So we've been persecuted here, and it's hard to sit back and watch the news where other states are passing these laws and being allowed the use of medical cannabis or recreational cannabis. And here we sit in the southern states, where not one state has really done anything for us.
Yeah, the southern people seem to have a problem with unity down here for some reason.
Really? Question, Robert, your PTSD was brought up. I noted that not only Delegate Holmes, what's her name? Yeah, Eleanor Holmes Norton, she brought up PTSD and using cannabis to treat PTSD and it being successful, and as well as the Nevada Representative Dina Titus. She also brought that up a lot. So it's not like, what I'm trying to say is, it's not like the science isn't there. And I thought that was important because you're on they're taking minutes or whatever transcribing what's being said in Congress, and that's on the record.
The bigger problem that we're having right now is just trying to get a jury seated. Mm-hmm. They indicted me immediately to show their stern face. And then they proceeded to pocket or shelf the indictment, whatever. Nothing
has happened. Well, that's typical in North Carolina.
Time keeps passing, but they should not have the right to go and challenge a law that the people proved by electing the representatives and then voting on it in the legislature and passing. Now the Republicans can go in there and just challenge that law arbitrarily at their leisure. But a citizen in North Carolina can't call the government on their BS for a medicine, and they can play keep away with the law. That's mm-hmm. what's taking place down here.
Question, Robert, and it's been a while because I'm a veteran as well. It's been a while since I've been to the VA hospital in Salisbury. But I also have noted that I think one of them mentioned that the the VA is prescribing medical marijuana in other states. Is that true? Have you heard anything about that? And if that's true, why can't you have access to it here in North Carolina through the VA?
Go ahead, Robert.
I hope I'm not behind the times on this. I had just read something on a friend's site earlier today that I thought said that it was not possible for any veteran in any state to get it through the dispensary. But I don't know that my physician at the VA in this state told me that when it becomes legal, he'll write me a prescription or a recommendation on that day. What I can do with that in court, I don't know. I believe they can write the recommendation in the legal states. The dispensary does not provide marijuana currently.
The VA regulations, they passed a VA regulation that, yes, veterans who live in the legal states where cannabis is now legal for medical use.
Yes, I'm looking at it now.
And use it for PTSD, but no physician anywhere in this country can prescribe cannabis until we remove it from the Schedule I status. They can only recommend.
Okay.
And then you go to a dispensary and you buy it for yourself.
It would really be interesting how much money the VA would save, because it's not just the narcotics that they're going to replace, the anti-everythings that they're going to replace. They're going to replace, or they're going to be able to stop spending money on a lot of medicines that we take because of the medicines we're forced to take because we don't have different options.
Well, I want to get a little more into the medical side of it and also the business side of it. I thought Representative Dina Titus, you know, since Republicans like to talk about creating jobs, well, she kind of touched on how this is creating jobs. And either you can, you know, get on board or you can get left behind. And it's just a shame if Republicans or whoever, politicians in North Carolina, wants to remain in the Stone Ages, you know, and let this pass us by, because, you know, certainly need jobs in this state. This is traditionally an agricultural state, and I think it would be poised. North Carolina farmers could provide lots of medicine, much needed medicine, to people. So let me just take a short station identification break, and I'm gonna play a little bit of these comments from Representative Dina Titus from Nevada.
That grace founded on 2/3 a person. Great things and beatings and suffering that worsens. Black human packages tied up in strings. Black rage can come from all these kinds of things.
You are tuned in to the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts and live program scheduling, visit us on the web at blacktalkradionetwork.com.
Well, thank you very much. And I'd like to thank my colleague, Congresswoman Norton, for arranging this important discussion about an issue that is moving quickly in state capitals across the country, here in Washington, D.C., but in Congress, maybe not so much. I'd like to speak about the legal regulated use of marijuana for medical and commercial sale, because this is an important issue that has garnered attention nationwide as states and communities continue to enact laws to allow for legal and carefully regulated and taxed sale and use. We see this in all parts of the country, in all types of communities, and we see it not just passed by state legislatures, but mandated through public referenda. I represent the heart of the Las Vegas Valley in the state of Nevada, where for nearly 14 years we've had a voter-approved mandate allowing for medical marijuana. And then just last year, the state legislature put forth a legal framework for medical marijuana businesses to be permitted, regulated, and to go into operation around the state. This has led to enormous interest from investors and entrepreneurs, researchers, and mostly importantly, from patients who now can benefit through the assistance of their physicians from medical marijuana for treatment for all kinds of things, a variety of things from epileptic seizures in children, PTSD treatment, pain relief from cancer, appetite enhancers for people undergoing chemotherapy, and HIV/AIDS. Nevada is now one of 23 states with legal marijuana for medical or commercial sale, and those numbers continue to grow after poll shows increasing support for legalization and regulation. We saw two states just in the election last week where marijuana was approved. Now, that brings us to what's happening here in Congress. Now, over the course of the last 113th congressional session, we've seen considerable advancement that had not been the case up until now. A few years ago, just a short time ago, only a small group of members of Congress would be willing to speak out about medical marijuana, much less support any kind of legislation that would update our nation's antiquated drug laws. But today, Democrats and some Republicans have come together to advocate for this industry and work to update the nation's laws to catch up to what's happening in the states and to reflect the realities of what's going on in Nevada, in Washington, D.C., and in places around the country. For the first time, with the help of leaders like Congressman Blumenauer, Congressman Rohrabacher, and others, the House of Representatives passed not one but two significant amendments to protect the rights of states when it comes to legal marijuana sale and use. As more and more states and communities move forward with ballot initiatives, like the one that passed here in D.C. 2-1, or with regulatory laws like those that were just enacted in Nevada, it's important that we as elected representatives of our community become educated and advocate for the community's best interest. Because of the important potential role that medical marijuana...
All right, we're going to stop it there before we run out of time on today's broadcast. And so, Robert, she again mentioned treating soldiers with PTSD. So, you know, talking about people like you could benefit from this. But, you know, she, again, she spoke with enthusiasm to me about how this is going to happen. So I don't even know why Republicans would want to fight this, you know, in North Carolina or anywhere. It's going to happen. And then how do they square that with their, you know, pro personal liberty and freedom message and all of that? But you want to, you know, you're so anti-freedom that you want to deny a patient, someone who is sick, someone who needs this medicine simply because you have some false code of morality that says cannabis is evil or something. I don't know. Let me unmute you guys. I think I had you muted while that clip was playing. Robert, your thoughts on what she had to say?
You know, we have laws on the books already that allow patients, that allow sick people to grow marijuana. Our greater problem has been a lack of courage on the part of our citizens to just stand up. You don't have to turn yourself in. Don't do that. You don't want to. But stand up, show up at the courthouse. Make them give a jury or make them drop charges. Just make them acknowledge that human beings exist, that somebody doesn't catch a buzz in one state.
Well, I have to applaud the lady from Nevada simply because I just finished chemotherapy June 21st of this year for a deadly form of lymphoma. I've been publicly using cannabis since 2010. And I also used cannabis right in front of my Duke cancer doctors and had none of the side effects from the chemo that people normally have. So what she said, and yes, I think she does have a very positive attitude. It sounds like to me she's spoken with some patience, that she sees the credibility and the anecdotal evidence, coming from people like me and many that I work with across the country, who have seen relief from all types of different diseases, cancers, PTSD, AIDS, epileptic seizures, using cannabis, and not just smoking it. And that's another thing. It's not just about smoking cannabis anymore.
Right.
Most of us are using cannabis extracts and other forms of cannabis because we now know that we have an endocannabinoid system. Most of our medical professionals were not even taught about it in medical school, but it is a real thing. And cannabis activates that system to fight all these different diseases. So I'm really excited to just see people in Congress waking up. And that's what she said. It's basically, it's time to wake up. We've got people out here who are alive because of their use of medical cannabis.
Exactly, exactly. Yeah, I think that the issue is gaining momentum. And I think that in those states that where you have politicians who are maybe beholden to the pharmaceutical companies and they don't want it to become, legal.
Exactly.
Yeah. You also have, you've had alcohol companies come, you know, lobby against, legalization because they don't want a competing recreational, you know, product competing with their beer, wine, and liquor. And so, you know, but I do think momentum is building. And what I think most of the momentum is building from is education. That people are not falling for the propaganda of reefer madness anymore. And, you know, it's been around. People been using it for quite some time. And we just know the other side is lying. And so they lack
everybody
credibility.
Knows somebody that uses cannabis.
Right.
And it's sad that probably 90% or more of these people are good people with homes and families. And nowadays, Facebook has been taken over by the cannabis movement.
Yes, it has.
You can go into YouTube or Google now and type in cannabis and cancer. Type in cannabis and Parkinson's disease. You'll find somebody out there, publicly speaking, who has these conditions. And you need to educate yourself. There's plenty of information on the endocannabinoid system and how that functions in our bodies. It's out there. People just need to do their own research like the lady from Nevada did.
Mm-hmm. Most certainly. Did you
Reefer madness is over.
Yeah, they really did, get people with that one. And, you know, the kids, and that's what Mr. Andy Harris is trying to do. Oh, this means that, kids will now have access to it. You know, more kids will have access to cannabis. But that's
simply
not true.
No, they have less access when we make it a legal industry and it's in the hands of adults. I mean, that's
common sense. Regulated. It's regulated and taxed, of course.
Isn't that what we did with alcohol?
Exactly.
Isn't that why we put alcohol in the ABC store?
Right. So that's why, you know, I feel like they might as well just stop. Just stop because the people are not that ignorant.
Yeah, give it up.
Yeah. Just stop it with the lies. All right. And let's move this country forward on this issue.
Exactly.
Robert, did you have any final comments and thoughts you wanted to leave with the listeners? And I do want to encourage everyone to also go to their website on Facebook, North Carolina. That's NC Campaign for Cannabis Awareness. NC Campaign for Cannabis Awareness. Robert, did you have any final thoughts?
Patients' rights are civil rights. That's my thought.
Thank you. Thank you.
Also join us
in
Washington, D.C.
Thank you very much for having us on.
Yeah, Overgrow the Government will be in Washington, D.C. on 4/20. That's April 20th, 2015 at the Sylvan Theater. Be there.
Thank you, Robert and Rebecca. You both have a good evening.
You too.
You.
Let's all sing Pop Goes the Weasel.
I see the empty pocket needs a refill.
I got a squad with a list of complainers. I should have started rape. Rappers against phony entertainers. So we can make it known that we won't get swayed. It's 91, son, so something's gotta change.
Getting paid, pedal speakers, and soda. Pop, 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 pop goes the weasel in drawers.
Drop, 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 drop.
Why not take your top 10 pop head? Fix the music and make sense. This rhyme's fit.
I guess it's the fact that you can't be autistic. Intricate raps becoming so simplistic. I got a strong mind. It doesn't
During the month of
so
October 2014, the Black Talk Radio Network distributed 9,605 total listening hours to 8,109 unique listeners. That is up 49% over the previous month. To keep us on the air, make a donation to the Black Talk Media Project today. Donations can be made via PayPal buttons on the website, blacktalkradionetwork.com, or by sending a check or money order to Black Talk Media Project, P.O. Box 65, Mount Holly, North Carolina, 28120. Black Talk Radio Network is new black media for the new millennium.
This is Brother Elliot, host of Time for an Awakening, and you're listening to Black Talk Radio Network, new media for the new millennium.
And welcome welcome back. Once again, you're listening to the Black Talk Radio Live Drive at 5 an hour of news, information, and more. Now, I want to talk about, and I have filed this one away under the category of proxy racism. For those that don't know what proxy racism is when a non-white person works for a system and practices racism by as a proxy. All right, of those who are in control of the system. For personal advancement, it could also be under threat, coercion, but usually it is for personal reward that people want to uphold the evil system. Especially when we're talking about slavery. Make sure y'all tune in Wednesday nights at 8 o'clock p.m. Eastern time to New Abolitionist Radio. Like Max says, give them 90 minutes and they will convince you that slavery was never abolished in the United States. Now, you have this case coming out of California, and I've been talking about this or reporting on this over the weeks, over the months even, about, you know, first of all, the Supreme Court saying that California had to release so many tens of thousands of prisoners to ease overcrowding because it was cruel and unusual punishment. We, through New Abolitionist Radio, reported on how the GEO Group, before it was made public, were talking about on their earnings calls, talking to other insiders in the slavery business in America. They were talking about these, they might have some opportunities in California, because California was like, oh, we're not going to let them go if the problem is cruel and unusual punishment due to overcrowding, then we are just going to send them to other prisons and, let's call the GEO Group up and get them to open up another facility and we'll transfer these new slaves over to that new slave plantation, you know, and let George Zoli make anywhere from, you know, $30,000 to $60,000 a year per bed, as he calls them. Not even human beings. They look at them as a furniture, a piece of furniture, something that's going to make me money, commodity. But anyway, California is still not, you know, doing what it's supposed to do. And speaking of ballot initiatives, they recently passed, I think that was Proposition 71, where they reclassified drug possession felonies in the state to misdemeanors, which resulted in people getting out of prison. People who were facing, you know, felony crimes in the courts, well, those were reduced to misdemeanors. It makes a big difference in the amount of time one gets on whether or not you're charged with a felony or a misdemeanor. So the voters did that by direct democracy. And so, but that's still not going to result in enough people being released as ordered by the courts. And so this is still being argued in the federal courts, but this is what really, really just, as they say, stuck in my craw, so to speak. I don't know where that saying came from. But anyway, I'm in the South. So anyway, the Attorney General, her name is Kamala Harris, a black woman. I'm sure she's read Michelle Alexander's book. They're both attorneys. You know, she's black. I'm sure she's probably been asked questions about mass incarceration and what did you think of Michelle Alexander's book and things of that nature. But she is on the wrong side of this in California. In general, she is on the wrong side of the question of modern slavery or the issue of modern slavery in the United States. Again, you know, 13th Amendment said slavery and involuntary servitude is abolished except, big old exception coming, about to hit you in the head with it, except for punishment is crime. Now, so they don't want to let these people out because they can then make them slaves. What is a slave? A slave is somebody, a human being who has been enslaved by either a nation, a government entity, or by an individual, or by a society, you know. So anyway, since this initiative that recently passed isn't going to free enough people and they're going to have to let some more people go, California is still fighting it through their attorney general. And that brings us back to Kamala Harris. And so lawyers that work in her office have been arguing in court that if they are forced to release these inmates early, prisons would lose an important labor pool. Prisoners' lawyers countered that the corrections department could hire public employees to do the work. In other words, you can stop practicing slavery. 8 cents to 37 cents per hour. That's slave wages. And see, where do y'all think the word slave wages came from? The fact that some enslaved human beings were paid wages depending upon what type of skills they had. You know, if I'm making my master a lot of money, then he gonna try to keep me happy and he might, you know, give me a few coins. Throw me a couple of coins. You know, we've read about people being able to purchase their freedom, in this country back in the, you know, prior to pre-1865 slavery. So, yeah, I was just shocked that this woman would even argue this. This is straight up slavery, 8 cents to 37 cents per hour. If we let these people go home, then we gonna lose all this cheap labor. Are we living in a 21st century? Or are we living in the 1800s where they was using convict labor, as they call it, through the convict leasing system, and the railroads was leasing these people out of prison to come work on and build the railroad to the west for, you know, pennies on the dollar? This is slavery. This is modern day slavery. And I'm just appalled. I'm just appalled that, you know, human beings would put forth the argument that we should keep these people, these other human beings, enslaved, because if we don't, we're going to lose an important labor pool. So I need to look into that more. All right. Definitely one for us to take up on New Abolitionist Radio. The last thing I want to get to for as we get ready to close out this hour of news and information and more is that the Operation KKK, have y'all heard of that? The anonymous group of hackers, they have launched so-called war on these websites belonging to Ku Klux Klan or white supremacist websites, because they say that they were upset with the KKK issuing flyers and stuff like that in Ferguson, threatening the people and, you know, and all of that. So they've been taking down their websites, you know. I don't even know if we can, cyber war is real, but, you know, the KKK is not really that big of a deal, in this country. They can not to be taken lightly, you know, cause an individual can cause a lot of harm, but they're not really that big of a deal, you know. I don't really see how we can say that that's fighting a war against them. If they want to do something, how about hacking into the email of Attorney General of California and, see what the internal communications about how we going to argue in court, or how we going to keep these people enslaved, and how much money we're making off of them, or how much money we're saving by putting these prisoners to work like this and selling the products that they make and, you know, leasing them out to corporations. And you want to hack something, hack that kind of stuff. You want to fight against racism, white supremacy, focus on the United States government. You know what I'm saying? I'm not really worried about no Klan. We can handle the Klan. You know what I'm saying? They just a bunch of idiots and sheets anyway. You know, they so desperate, they trying to recruit black people now, and Jews and Hispanics. So, you know what I'm saying? They are not the threat that they once were. Not to be taken lightly, but we can handle them. But what we cannot handle, it seems at the moment, is the United States government and all of the states and municipalities that are practicing slavery, primarily through the drug war. I mean, no country on the face of the planet locks up more people on a prison plantation than the United States, but yet you still want to walk around talking about land of freedom, you know, land of the free, home of the brave. But, you know, how brave are you if you're not even willing to stand up to your own government for practicing an evil institution like slavery? So, you know, Shout out to Anonymous for hacking the KKK websites. But if you really want to impress me, you know, I just told you who to go after. Go after these attorney generals and these governors. You know, get me the emails between Governor Rick Scott and the CEO of the GEO Group, the private prison enslaver. Yeah, give me some internal emails on the 80-something investigations, open investigations of the murders of inmates in the state of Florida alone. You know what I'm saying? So, you know, just taking down people's websites. Wow. Okay. I can't get to the website. Wow. You know, I'm causing me some inconvenience. You know, that's not really doing anything except for, you know, like a little kid or something. Oh, look what I did. No, put, do some damage to them. Get some of these emails like WikiLeaks has done. You know, do some of that kind of hacking. I'm sure, these states and, you know, these, people like that, the GEO Group, hacking their email accounts. I don't think that they are as secure. You know, impress us. You know, get us some emails from these private prison companies so we can, further expose them to be the evil, human enslavers that they are. All right, that's our program. You've been listening to Black Talk Radio, the live drive at 5. I'll be back on the air tomorrow at 5 o'clock p.m. Eastern. Hope that you will join me then and bring a friend. Peace and blessings to all.
The police the same way. They put their club upside your head and then turn around and accuse you of attacking them. Every case of police brutality against a Negro follows the same pattern. They attack you, bust you all upside your mouth, and then take you to court and charge you with assault. What kind of democracy is that? What kind of freedom is that? What kind of social or political system is it when a black man has no voice in court, has no nothing on his side other than what the white man chooses to give him? My brothers and sisters, we have to put a stop to this. And it will never be stopped until we stop it ourselves. They attack the victim. And then the criminal who attacked